Welcome, everyone, to this teleclass with the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School. I'm Kaylin Castell. I'm here with Daniel DiMario. On behalf of the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, it is a 501c3 educational nonprofit, and we provide transformational education in astronomy and astrology. This teleclass is designed to introduce you to the core principles of Shamanic Astrology and how you can use this system to quickly access life purpose. So we'll be sharing more about that in a moment, but first I just want to say that the school is an educational nonprofit, so if you find this information useful, we invite you to consider becoming a member of the school. Members receive really many great benefits, including free monthly calls that we do on what's happening in the sky, how you can work with that information, how to support your journey at this time with so many amazing events taking place. With the Uranus-Pluto square, and, we just
had
the equinox.
Ages, and galactic alignment.
So many things.
2012.
And we cover all of that in the monthly calls. We also have time for Q&A in those calls. And they're recorded, so if you can't be on the call, on the live call, then you can get the recordings later. And we also do take questions via email before the call if you can't be on those monthly calls. Members also receive discounts on events and products. And we are currently offering an extra special giveaway for silver or gold members that includes a free copy of the newly revised and expanded Shamanic Astrology Handbook that was just re-released in May of 2012. We added 50 pages of content to the book, and it's updated with all the latest from the evolution of this work over the last few years. So if you're interested in knowing more about membership benefits, you can go to the website, and we'll also include a link in the follow-up email that will have the directions on how to access the recording of this call after we're complete with it. And the call will probably be posted within the next couple of days, and then an email will go out with giving you the link to so you can download, listen to and download the call. So now I would like to introduce you to Daniel DiMario, the founder of Shamanic Astrology and the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School, and he's going to start us off with the genesis of this approach to the astrological mysteries.
Great to be here with you again, Kaylin, and to be able to share the core material of this paradigm. Just a little bit about the background on this. I actually have been a professional astrologer for 42 years. I came out of the astrological renaissance that occurred in the late 60s and early 70s. I started out as a student of Dane Rajar in what was called the humanistic astrology movement. But as we reached about the early 1980s, then I went on a vision quest at Mount Shasta, and I had a completely new transmission for how I would want to do astrology, which was to include the experience directly of the night sky, and to have the astrological material be animated by the direct experience of the magical connection between the land and the sky. And over the last maybe 25 years, I've integrated different insights that come mainly from Polynesia, Scotland and Ireland, and Southwest Native American, and as much as possible incorporating what the larger a greater extent of human history has contributed to our connection to the night sky. So I like to include a lot of the insights that come from Neolithic times and certainly emphasizing strongly the genius of the Hellenistic culture, but also including Chinese and Indian, Mesoamerican, Mayan, as much as possible, the global traditions associated with human beings working with the night sky, and integrating that into a system that is directly applicable to where our journey is now. And there's so many things that we can talk about within this paradigm, but what we're going to be doing in these three teleclasses is providing the background material that you can work with directly to be able to access the powerful tools that are available when you're going beyond sun sign astrology. Sun sign astrology is actually rather recent. Maybe about 150 years ago, there were a couple of clever journalists who came up with the idea of categorizing everyone in monthly categories, because actually the information was not available to very many people as far as what is truly more essential about astrology, like the moon, Venus, Mars, rising sign, the angles of the chart. Also, much of what had been shared about sun signs was an interpretation that was sort of like frozen in stone, like it was written material that was based upon what the truth was in a culture previously. And we know now in shamanic astrology approach, and we're certainly not the only one saying this, that the gods and goddesses are dancing in unique ways. It's shifting and changing into different expressions of who we are. And because of the time period we're in, acceleration and recapitulation, which is what happens at the turning of the ages, it's never been more of interest, but also it's never been more urgent to, as quickly as we can, access what our original intention is or was.
Daniel, I just like you to take a moment and explain how shamanic astrology does look at the sun sign, because it's not that it's not important, it's just important in a different way.
Right. So from the perspective of the experience of our universe around us, the sun, not to minimize the sun, but we don't project any specific archetype onto it. It's like when you look at nature, you look at the world around us, the sun is the only thing that you can't look at for very long without turning away. I mean, it's so powerful. We like to think of the sun as the direct manifestation of great mystery itself. We also locate ourselves in time with the sun sign, but it doesn't provide very much information as far as the soul's journey. It's sort of like saying, this is the month you were born in, but that's about it. And pretty much anyone with any degree of intelligence would realize that you can't say the same thing to everyone born within a month. It's just way too general, and it makes the whole subject not useful. It's like we could say, like in a sun sign column in the newspaper, it says in fine print, for entertainment purposes only. We're talking about something here more substantial. So I'd like to actually to take this further by saying that this work is based around two assumptions. The first assumption is that when you get born, when you come into the life, you're not a blank slate. There is an original essence. There's a place on the wheel of life you would have been on before. It's very helpful to know your lineage, to know where you've come from, the place on the wheel of life that would have given rise to attitudes, habits and addictions and expectations and a skill set. Along with this information, this insight, that we're not a blank slate when we come in, that we have an essence that cannot be altered by what our parents do or do not do to us, that the awareness of that essence assists us in having like a compassion for those places in us that kind of fix our personality in a particular way. But additionally, we're not passing any judgment. One of the things about shamanic astrology is that we don't weight things. There's no debilities. There's no exaltations. There's no rulerships and so on. Every particular planetary position, every particular sun sign, if you have to say that, is equally valid. It's not like we don't take in questions like, born under a bad sign, or Scorpio moon, is that a good one or a bad one, or people feeling embarrassed maybe because they have a lot of Virgo or something like this. We value all the places on the wheel. So the first assumption is we come in with an essence. The second assumption in this work is that there is an intention. There's a meaning or purpose to our life. And it's really valuable to be able to access that in a fast way, in a quick way, with a way of verifying it, validating it, and getting reinforcement for it. Another way to put this is that we don't wish to be blinded by cultural reality. We don't want to be overwhelmed by what the view of our parents were, or the view of the patriarchal culture. I mean, let me add one other ingredient to this. The view of this historically is that the last 2,500 years, or maybe the last 3,000 years, has been somewhat of an aberration. If we look at the 160,000 years at least of human beings on this planet having the same DNA, it's really only the last 2,000 or 3,000 years that this thing I'm calling the triple aberration took place, which is the union of patriarchal, hierarchical patriarchal culture, patrilineal family descent, and monotheistic religions. You put those three things together and you get the situation of such an estrangement from our planet. And something that's damaging to what the shamanic cultures of the past knew, that we were part of life, that we were a connection point between as above, so below. So we would need to say here that the shamanic astrology mystery school paradigm takes absolutely seriously and literally the original inspiration for astrology was as above, so below, as within, so without. It's a magical world. It's not a linear cause and effect world. So that's enough, I think, about the overall underlying philosophy behind this. So far on a practical level, all we've said is this is beyond the sun sign. So therefore, when we talk about in this call, you know, we use words like Virgo or Aries or Libra, the different sign names, don't relate it to the sun sign. We're going to be giving you some, I think, some very important clues about what to relate it to. The call that's going to come up after this one, the next one in the schedule, is going to be looking in great detail at the Venus and Mars positions. We're not going to be doing as much with that in this call. We're going to place most of the attention here about how to access quickly life purpose issues. Now, in order to understand this, we have to start with the lineage. Now, in this system, the moon, the position of the moon, is who you used to be. So, for example, Kaelin has a Sagittarius moon. I have a Capricorn moon. So in the language of this work, if you have a Capricorn moon, that's like saying, I used to be a Capricorn, or I previously graduated from the University of Capricorn, or I come from the Capricorn tribe. Kaelin could say that about Sagittarius. 12 tribes. Now, that narrows it down to one out of 12. The moon changes every 2.5 days. So you could say that about every 2.5 days a different tribe drops in. But those moon positions are not all the same. So based upon a birth time, you can get a sense of what specialty you had in that tribe. So let's say in this system we're using the imagery of 12 jobs in 12 tribes or 12 majors in 12 universities. 12 times 12 is 144. So we're actually dealing with here a geometry of 144 storylines, all authentic, all valid, all places on the wheel of life. So we've come from somewhere. And then from this place where we've come from, we could look at it as DNA, we could look at it as family history, we could look at it as a mythic sense of past life themes, and you come in from that place, and your attitudes and habits will come from that. So that's the starting point. Then there's another storyline, which is primarily based upon the rising sign, and this would be the storyline of current life purpose. It's kind of like saying the directional flow of the soul is toward the ascendant. Now, what I'm sharing with you so far is considerably different than how mainstream astrology would look at it. They might say the moon, for example, is female or emotions or feelings or something like that. They only use goddess imagery for it. We are using an approach that takes it much further back into history when both the sun and the moon have gods and goddesses. We're not putting any kind of male-female thing on it. There's just as many solar gods as solar goddesses as solar gods, or lunar gods and lunar goddesses. So we're trying to get beyond this thing of the last 2,000 years that boxed things in, like certain words. In a sense, there's even a manipulation of the language to say certain things are male or female. So we're looking at the moon as lineage, where you've come from. That's different than the mainstream view. But also the rising sign, or the sometimes called the ascendant, which you can't really know unless you have a birth time. If you have a birth time, then you can get an awareness of the thing on the chart that changes every 2 hours. So every 2 hours, a different rising sign rises in the east, which is a signifier of the school you're signing up for, the mystery school you're signing up for, the tribe you're wanting to enter into. So the directional flow of the soul is toward the rising sign. So if a person has, say, for example, Libra rising, that doesn't mean that's how they are. In fact, most people with Libra rising, they're beginners. You know, they'll be a beginner unless they have a Libra moon. And so it's a beginner place. You can't know what it is ahead of time. So there's a kind of compassion we can have for a person's rising sign, because it's what the person is investigating. That narrows it down to 1 out of 12. If you know the house position of the north node of the moon, then you can come up with the entire articulation of the storyline for current life purpose, the job in the tribe, the major in the mystery school. So, for example, Kaylin, if you don't mind me bringing you...
Go right ahead.
...has Scorpio rising, and she has the Taurus job in the Scorpio tribe, or the second house job in the Scorpio tribe, which is the pleasure of going deeper into aliveness, deeper into the depth of the psyche, deeper into the shamanic and the tantric realms, deeper into the emotional and feeling function realm of our life's journey, to go to the edge. And as I would always say about somebody with a Scorpio rising, you can't really see the edge until you go slightly past the edge and look back.
One of the ways I like to think about it is the pleasure of intensity and aliveness, having the Taurus job. And you know, the pleasure of living my passion and doing what I love to do. And one of those things is shamanic astrology.
So the additional factor is that somebody might be thinking, well, what if you don't know your birth time? So we actually do use the sign position of Jupiter to come up with similar information. The sign position of Jupiter, if you don't have a birth time, is like your dharma, the particular way of life that will take you to the accomplishment and the fulfillment of the life intent. Again, we're making the assumption here that upon incarnation, there is a set of intentions. We're not living a life that's a crapshoot. And even if it were a crapshoot, even if there was no higher meaning or purpose to our adventure here, it's actually part of what a human being does, which is to create meaning and purpose out of meaninglessness. I too believe that there is a higher realm of meaning and purpose. And the thing that's so interesting about using the rising sign this way is that you can actually answer all life questions, at least in general, by applying the question to the storyline for current life purpose, the rising sign. So whether it's what kind of relationship to be in, where you're going to live, what kind of right livelihood, but what kind of friends to have. I mean, basically all life questions can really be informed by applying the question to the rising sign. The directional flow of the soul, again, is toward the rising sign, 12 different rising signs. And then if you have the birth time, then the north node of the moon's house position will further differentiate it. 12 jobs and 12 tribes. 12 majors in 12 schools, 144 storylines, authentic, equally valid, even though very few cultures have valued all of them. So one of the purposes of the Shamanic Astrology Mystery School is to value and understand all of these from a place of global and historical reality, not to be confined to what the last 100 years or last 500 years has said. This is particularly important for things like, you know, What are the expressions? What does it be to be a man? What does it be to be a woman? How does relationship operate authentically at this time period in history? The next teleclass is going to be placing a lot of attention on the 24 different versions of the masculine and the feminine by way of Venus and Mars. But when we open this up for questions, it's perfectly fine to also, you know, ask about Venus and Mars, because in this system, Venus and Mars represent the intention in the current life for what version of masculinity or femininity you're coming into be. Let me offer one example here, and this goes back to beyond the sun sign theme. 2/5 of all women will have the sun sign and Venus in the same sign. When they're in the same sign, then a lot of the basic material about sun signs work. But 3/5 of all women have Venus in a completely different sign than the sun, in which case then the most useful piece of information is to know the Venus position. Again, it doesn't mean that that's how you are, but it's like a set of instructions. The life's journey becomes more powerful, more meaningful, more magical when we are embracing the set of instructions associated with Venus and Mars. This call, however, is going to be emphasizing the dynamic of the flow from who you used to be and then getting clues about what the destination point of the journey is. Probably this has been your experience too, Kaylin. These days, the number one question people want to know when they get a reading is about life purpose.
I totally agree with that. Yes, absolutely.
Now this particular group might be interested in hearing a little bit about the genesis of your journey, about not having had a background in conventional astrology and how this has been useful in your own life and practice.
Absolutely. I went to my first shamanic astrology class that Daniel was giving in Tucson at the Tucson Astrologers Guild back in May of 1990. I was a young mother, actually ready to have my youngest, my fourth child. And when I heard him speak, I absolutely knew I had to know more about this. And I didn't really know much about astrology. I kind of thought it was interesting, but it seemed to me to be very complicated. Seemed like there was a lot that you had to know. And I just didn't have the space in my life to want to even begin to figure it all out. And when I heard what Daniel was doing, and I had this sense, and you may not get that, you may get the sense of it, but you may not get totally understand it from this call, but I totally understood that this was a system I could learn, and it was mine to learn, you know, in a way. And so, and being a busy mom, and I had a baby 2 weeks later, and I had four kids, and they were all under the age of 7, at that time. So I found ways to learn this material, and that's been 22 years ago, and it has been the most incredible journey for me. And I truly had no background in astrology prior to that, other than I knew I was a Pisces sun, and I also knew what my moon and my rising were, but I didn't. Beyond that, I just, you know, I didn't even know what that meant. So this is a system that is. If a person's interested, if there's something they're passionate about and they want to learn, this system is easy to learn, and it doesn't take 20 years.
Right.
I learned it very quickly.
It's also not highly technical,
right.
Although certainly, and if you get a reading from a shamanic astrologer, it will include aspects and, you know, where are you on the timeline of your life, and you know, some of the more technical stuff is there. But we are primarily emphasizing this sort of flow of the soul's journey, from someone we used to be, and then fulfilling the intention of current life purpose, just using the basic archetypes. If I'm doing a 5-minute quick take, you know, somebody gives me their birthday and I look it up, first things I look at are the moon, and then Venus and Mars. And if I know the birth time, then we look at the rising sign. And just knowing those things will give amazing background on what's going on in that person's life and how to give feedback that will be very helpful.
I've had that experience too, and it's amazing what you can say to people and just blow them away. One thing I'd like
in a good way, yes.
Of course. One thing I'd just like to mention here is that if you're listening to this and this is something that is interesting to you, we will be having a 5-day intensive at the end of October, October 31st to November 4th, that teaches this very material. And within that 5 days, you will learn everything you need to know to be able to read your own chart and anybody else's. It may take some practice to get really good at it, but you will have all the tools you need to read a chart within that 5 days. And there's a lot of information on the website that you can check into about that. So I highly encourage anyone who feels any pull to do this work to check that out and to come to one of our classes.
Before we open this up to questions, I did want to mention another thing here, which is that in looking at the moon and looking at the rising sign as the main clues for the journey of the soul and to be able to get a sense of life purpose, it's good to know a little bit about the categories of what we call the mystery schools. So, for example, if we look at it from the perspective of the moon, the 12 different moon positions can be divided into roughly three categories. One category, certain moon positions, certain signs, certain mystery schools are in a category we call householder. These are the tribes that were the builders of the world that are concerned about holding the culture together from one generation to the next. These for anyone who's out there who does do a more mainstream form of astrology, these are called the cardinal signs. So Cancer, Capricorn, Libra, Aries are the householder ones, the builders and the holder together the culture over time. You know, archetypal family builders, city builders, culture builders, relational agreements, the defenders and the protectors of the culture. So in general, we would say those, if a person had a moon there, that's who they used to be. They were involved in things like long-term commitments and a sense of continuity and perpetuity for long periods of time in a culture. And then the second category would be what we call the mystery schools that are in service to spirit, not about the development of the self, not about the development of, we could say, accomplishments or achievements or manifesting one generation to the next as far as householder affairs, but entirely in service to spirit. And these would be Virgo, Pisces, Gemini, and Sagittarius, four different ones that are primarily in service to spirit in different ways. The Virgo one would be like the priestess and the priest who are committed to their sacred work. The Piscean lineage, which are the healers and helpers and throughout time. The Sagittarius, which is where the best way one can be in service to spirit is to attend to one's own liberation first. The quest for meaning and purpose itself. And the Gemini one, which is like the Heoka, the individual in the tribe that doesn't have to follow any of the rules. But not out of self-interest do they behave that way. It's in service to spirit, like the court jester, the only one who can tell the king the truth and not be killed. It's necessary to bring that sort of irrational element in, I guess you could say. And then last but not least, the four, which would be in mainstream astrology referred to as fixed signs, we call them self-interest. The signs or the mystery schools of self-interest. Please understand, for those that are listening, I'm not talking about sun signs here. So just because you might have a Taurus sun, this is not necessarily about you. Okay, but the four of self-interest, Taurus, Scorpio, Leo, Aquarius, whose affairs, whose interest, whose inquiry in life is a certain area of life experience for its own sake. For example, Aquarius is designed to expand consciousness as far as possible for its own sake. Leo is designed to be creator for its own sake. Scorpio is designed to go into intensity and aliveness for its own sake. Taurus, greatly misunderstood in conventional mainstream astrology, is about the full journey of Epicureanism, to savor and enjoy what it is to be in a body for its own sake. The intensity, the duration and moderation associated with experiencing, in a sense, the Garden of Eden without the fall. These four, the last four that we've mentioned, operate at their best outside the censoring or the judgments that would come from what in psychology is called the superego. So I'm just kind of enlivening the territory about the 12 tribes.
So just to say that self-interest does not necessarily mean selfish, although a shadow expression of it could be that, but it's more about the experience of the self, what the person is experiencing within themselves, without necessarily having to filter that through how they're experiencing it through another person.
Then if we include the elements that are associated with the 12 tribes, then we have something that is fairly similar to Jung's understanding of the four psychological functions. There's fire signs, which is about intuition, the tip of the arrow, the tip of the spear. It's an actional energy. Then we have air.
Wait, just a second, just because sometimes people associate intuition with feeling, so we need to maybe just define that a little bit more.
Sense of intuition. It's like the tip of the, it's an actional force. It's not like the water version of intuition. It's like when you apprehend something directly, you quickly get it, that version of intuition. And that would be Sagittarius, Leo, and Aries. Then the air signs are the thinking function, objective awareness, the witness, rational mind, data, information. Then we would have the water signs, which is associated with the feeling function. And I did want to mention something about the feeling function, which is misunderstood, and it's great you brought this up about the difference between feeling function and intuition. Feeling function, which would show up in the water signs, Pisces and Cancer and Scorpio, is kind of like the mammalian heart. The feeling function is when you automatically, instinctively want to protect your children. Or if you sense into where suffering or sorrow in the world is, where the heart opens and you connect in on the level of feeling as to what is actually taking place around you.
It'll be different for Scorpio, though.
But it's still connecting in to that living, that alive connection. It's not something mental, something you either feel or you don't. And then there's the earth signs, which is based upon kinesthetics and the sensation function for different reasons. I mean, we can't go into every detail of every one of them. We want to, basically when we open it up to questions, you know, that's a good time in order to address each one of them. But to recapitulate here, the journey of the soul, the ability to sense into and apprehend then what life purpose is part of this dynamic of having come from somewhere where you have attitudes and habits and addictions and expectations and a skill set, and how that can transform and move through the life into a different place on the wheel of life, which we're calling the intent of the life. So we do believe there is a mission, and purpose statement that can be accessed.
One of the things I just want to mention here is that if you're interested in knowing more about how shamanic astrology looks at the archetypes and everything that Daniel's mentioned here, and just very briefly, there's a lot of detail about the archetypes in the Shamanic Astrology Handbook. In fact, that was the part we most rewrote when we expanded it and rewrote it. And you can purchase that book off the Shamanic Astrology website. And again, completely revised and expanded, and a great way to get the essence of what it is that we're talking about here.
There may be a few people wondering, so why in the world do you all call it shamanic astrology? There's a lot of answers to that question, but I believe that the most important thing to say about that question now is that what shamanic astrology does is that it includes and integrates the most useful techniques that come from our past as a species. And the majority of our past as a species was connected to our experience of being connected to the earth and the sky. So the shamanic astrology techniques are based upon our connection not only to the sky and the land, you know, the seasons and cycles and experiencing it with our senses, but it is also based around the idea that these energies, these archetypes, we use the word archetype, I mean, that's a modern psychological abstraction for a lot of people, but what archetype means today is no different than what the ancients understood as the gods and the goddesses. If you were a member of, say if you were Greek, and everywhere around you are statues of the gods and goddesses, well, there's Athena, there's Aphrodite, there's Hephaestus, you know. It's like there's the statue of these guys, these figures. The people would immediately know what that represented psychologically. There was a certain essence and energy to those particular gods and goddesses, which we now today call archetypes. So that's part of why it's shamanic astrology, but it's also part of the reason why we call it shamanic astrology is that it is possible to gain a connection to these energies. So we don't want someone just doing astrology, or nobody in the shamanic astrology mystery school is doing it just because they've learned the stuff in a book. It's like forming a relationship to these energies directly. Most of our school is founded on the idea of a soul-to-soul encounter. So if you have a reading from a shamanic astrologer, you're engaging into a dialogue with the mystery, with that person being a facilitator for it. Since we are somehow, in a certain sense, involved with the greater shamanic community, it needs to be said that our view about shamanism is a little different than the ancient one. Our view is that our job is to awaken the shaman within, is to awaken that intuitive guru or shaman inside that assists you on your journey. You don't really need to project it onto some external teacher or somebody who's going to take it on for you. One of the main ingredients of the turning of the ages, the time we're in now, which is that every human being has an opportunity to connect to those mysteries. It's not owned by the last few thousand years, the priest class or some version of hierarchy where they have secret special knowledge. You can understand why that the sun sign thing became so popular. Because 150 years ago, 100 years ago, 50 years ago, you had to go to some specialist to find out where the moon or rising and so on were. Today it's available to everybody. You just go online and find out.
You can just go. There's lots of websites where you can get a free chart if you know your birth date, time, and place, and find out all this information easily. Another thing I'd just like to add to what Daniel is saying is that one of the premises of this approach is that we inform the mysteries as much as they inform us. And Daniel talked about this a little bit in the beginning where he was saying that it's not a cause and effect approach or a way of looking at it, but that when we have an understanding of these energies and we're working with them and we're developing a relationship with them, they inform us, but we also inform them. And these energies, as is everything on the planet at this time, is in a highly speeded up evolutionary time. So getting an understanding of what these energies are and developing that relationship can support you in your journey in ways that are just incredibly magical and amazing, and I can't speak highly enough of it. I love this work.
And then we add, this can't be reiterated enough, which is to be able to somehow get beyond the blinders that is imposed on individuals by the culture they happen to be born in. I would love to blow the blinders off so we could see what the human species has actually been up to for 160,000 years, not just the debacle of the last couple thousand. So we're tapping into a tradition that involves our direct relationship with the sky and the land. This would actually work with or without technology. It could be said that shamanic astrology is a form of astrology that would work at any time in history, whether you had technology or not.
Including telescopes. So even if you could only see the visible planets,
right.
you could still work with this information and get and have incredible guidance and also interaction with the mysteries.
We don't actually train, we don't certify anyone in our school to be a shamanic astrologer unless they do have that relationship with the night sky. I can actually occasionally be somewhat fundamentalist about this, you know, and saying that I don't see how anybody could call themselves an astrologer who doesn't have a relationship with the night sky. I just don't get it. So, Kaylin, can you think of anything else that might be useful for us to bring out here before we go directly into question and answer here?
Well, there's only just one other thought that occurs to me, because I know some of the people on the call do have an astrological background, and they may be wondering or using a certain system. And it just might be useful to say a few words about the house system that we use.
Yes, I agree.
And because it is very important in really getting to the essence of life purpose.
Yes. I've actually, having been in the astrological world back to 1970, had the opportunity to use a variety of different house systems. And up until 1999, I used either Koch or Placidus. People would hand me the charts with those systems. But then I was very highly influenced by the research of Robert Hand. In about 1999, 2000, I had converted everything over to what is called the whole sign house system. My intention here in bringing this up is not to be critical of other house systems, but rather to say that within the framework of this archetypal understanding of the soul's journey, the imagery is way more precise when you use the whole sign house system. So when I was talking about the house position of the south node of the moon, the house position of the north node of the moon, to come up with the full definition of the 144 storylines, not just the sign of the moon and the sign of the rising sign, but to add this other factor, I'm using the whole sign house system to get that information. Also, before we open it up, just to reiterate that if you don't know a birth time, and so all you are going to know is your moon position, then we will use in the school the Jupiter sign position to access some of the information for the directional flow of the soul, what you're moving toward. That in combination with Venus and Mars. Because Venus and Mars, Venus for a woman would be the version of the goddess you came in to be, and Mars for a man is the version of masculinity that you came in to investigate, to check out. This whole thing of moving beyond cultural reality, the blinders that are placed on us based on the culture we're born into and the time we're born into, is so important to kind of release the authenticity of all the different places on the wheel of life. There's been wonderful movement on that in the culture, of our culture, in the last 30 or 40 years. First with the opening up of all the really diverse and amazing expressions of the goddess, and in the last 5 or 10 years, there's more of that happening within the framework of the masculine principle.
So I think then maybe we're ready to do question and answer. Mm-hmm. So what I want to suggest is that if you didn't get a chance to ask a question on the last call, that we'd love for you to get into the queue. And the way you do that is to press *6. I'm going to turn the Q&A session has started. So if you press *6, that'll put you into the queue. And we'll begin taking questions from people.
And these questions can be related to something you know about your chart, but it also could be related to this larger view of how we're looking at the chart, you know, if there's something that wasn't understandable about what we were saying regarding the model here.
So go ahead with your question, and can you tell us your name and also then what your question is?
Hi. Oh, okay. I guess this is me. My name is Bernice. And
Bernice.
I'm – hello?
Yes.
Okay, you can hear me.
We can hear you.
Okay, so I just want to give you my information, and then you can tell me, I mean, the direction that I should be going in. My birth time is 6:40 a.m.
I don't know whether we're able to just calculate it on the spot. What I would say is that if you know your moon and rising sign, then I'd be happy to comment on that.
Sure. I know my rising sign is Capricorn, my moon is in Aries, and my north node is in Virgo in my eighth house.
Right. So the north node in the eighth house we would call the Scorpio expression of that rising sign. So you said you had Capricorn rising?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So the life purpose theme of the Scorpio major in the University of Capricorn, or the Scorpio job in the Capricorn tribe, what it represents at this time in history is the leading edge of the complete reformulation of what the Capricorn Mystery School has been. Capricorn rising at this time in history is once again perceiving that Capricorn is part of the feminine principle, and it represents the expression of the feminine principle that the indigenous people refer to as the circle of grandmothers, the council of elders.
Mm-hmm.
Not grandmother in the sense of hanging out with the grandchildren, that can be part of it, but we're talking about an administrative, managerial directorship, the way it was understood in many cultures, where it was these circle of grandmothers, council of elder grandmothers, who were able to hire and fire the chiefs, who were able to make the decisions for the benefit of the seven generations to follow. And they were respected hugely. So the issue is to be in a position of some degree of influence and respect in your life, so you're actually able to implement those kinds of decisions and to be able to make a difference in that sense. Now, this doesn't necessarily mean to you yourself change the world. I mean, it can be in your own community, it can be in your own small area of influence, but it's still to take that weight, but not in the heavy sense of it, is that to be respected for your capacity to, quote, grow corn, to get results, with a great deal of scorpionic will and intensity to be able to take it as far as it needs to go, because God knows, Goddess knows, that the way Capricorn has been in the last couple thousand years has not been helpful to the planet. So that's actually a pretty major mission and purpose statement.
Okay.
What do you think?
I'm taking it. So, and basically, it's about service.
Well, it is true that Capricorn is one of the four places on the wheel that are giver positions.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, being in a position of some respect and a capacity to affect change in the world. You wouldn't be doing it for you. The power and influence that can come from the Scorpio job in the Capricorn tribe is not to have power and influence for its own sake, but to be able to have enough responsibility, enough capacity to make a difference that actually change occurs. And it is for the sake of the people. I mean, one of the things about Capricorn rising, which also would be true about Cancer rising, it would be related to the Native American view that we make no decisions save for the benefit of the seven generations to follow. What frequently happens for people beyond like 25 is that if they have Cancer or Capricorn rising, they will be amazingly experienced at what it is that doesn't work. So that gives a tremendous opening and freedom to be able to create something that actually does, particularly now at the time of the turning of the ages. And I should mention one other thing about what you've shared with me. Aries Moon?
Aries Moon.
Lineage.
Was it Aries Moon?
Yes, it was Aries Moon.
Yeah. So that's actually a lineage that is also very strong and powerful within the framework of the past, of the feminine. The Aries Moon is what we call Warrior Amazon. A woman whose identity is based upon her capacity to accomplish, achieve, and be free, but with a mission and purpose statement. So
mm-hmm.
often a person with that combination may have been lacking a mission and purpose statement as a way of kind of making an advancement, let's just say, to a point of a new place on the wheel where you have a mission and purpose that is really essential for the world at this time.
And just something else to remember, Bernice, is that when we're talking about the rising sign, it's what you're learning how to do. Everything that Daniel has been describing may or may not feel like what you've been doing in your life.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't, then the great thing is that's the directional arrow for you to move in, and you can consciously choose that. And if you have, then you know that you're on the right track, and you can choose that even more.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. That sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We're going to take the next question now. So go ahead.
Hi, this is Rebecca.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. Thank you. I've studied astrology for quite many years, but this shamanic astrology is new to me, and it's really opening my eyes and giving me lots of new insights, so thank you. Let's see where to start. I'm a Sagittarius moon,
mm-hmm.
and my moon is conjunct the North Node in Sag in the sixth house. I'm a Virgo sun and Mars Virgo in the third, and Cancer rising.
Were you born in the 56?
55, September 55.
55, okay, mm-hmm. Yeah, because I'm a Sag moon with my moon conjunct the North Node, too, so that's why I was asking.
Yeah.
I think we have a little something in common there.
Yes.
Well, a starting point here would be if we examine the Sag moon
mm-hmm.
from the perspective of shamanic astrology,
mm-hmm.
Sag moon is one of the two what we call renunciate moon positions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using the word renunciate in kind of an archaic way. Back in when people would either be householders or renunciates.
Mm-hmm.
Virgo and Sag moon are the renunciate moons. But mm-hmm. the purpose of that life way of life was primarily to be on the quest for meaning and purpose, a love of truth. So the lifestyles for Sag moon, and we're speaking here, of course, about your lineage, would be the explorer, the adventurer, the philosopher, the celestial navigator, probably one of my favorite of all ways of describing the lineage for women of the Sag moon would be the original story of Tara that in India, where the historical Tara was born at a time period in history when the belief was that enlightenment was only possible if you were born male. So what happened was that Tara gains enlightenment,
mm-hmm.
and the people would show up and pay homage to the person who had gained enlightenment and said, "We have good news, Tara, you can now incarnate as a man." And her response was, "You don't understand, every lifetime is have clear intention will be as a woman." So she was like a spiritual revolutionary who brought an archetype of the feminine into a culture that didn't allow for an independent investigation of consciousness up to and including enlightenment for the feminine principle. So this is not a lineage that's householder, not a lineage that's, say, mother-wife, that kind of thing. But Cancer rising.
Yeah.
Where did you say your Venus was? Excuse me?
Oh, my Venus is in the fourth in Libra.
Right. So this is a huge change of gears.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Venus in Libra is a version of the goddess that is here now in the current life to investigate collaborative, personal, conscious, equal partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first phase of life, if you put Venus in Libra together with Cancer rising, it would look like, what a huge change of gears. I mean, it's toward a family, household, or life away from the renunciate vision quest Amazon approach.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
But depending on what phase of life a person is in, like if a person with a chart like yours had succeeded or fulfilled a family, household, or path, it's still the inquiry is Cancer rising is how can I provide personal and responsible nourishment to a seed until the seed grows to what for it would be its maturity. That's the definition in our view of about what Cancer is. So the investigation is more personal. It's more giving, more about a connection with a clan, a tribe, whether a person has had children or not. It's still about how to provide nourishment to those seeds until they grow for what for them would be their maturity. So your chart, what you've shared here, is an example of what we would call extreme contrast. Mm. So, for example, whatever challenges you may or may not have had in your life regarding marriage, family, raising a family, and so on, we'd have great compassion because there would have been no foundation or background for those experiences coming from that Sag moon.
Mm-hmm.
You follow what I mean?
Yes, I totally do. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. It took me a long time in this life to become a mother, but it was always important to me too. It took me 3 marriages, and then finally, when I was 40, I was with the man who wanted to have a child, and so I have 1 daughter. And it's interesting to me that her moon is in Cancer, so
she's
almost like my teacher as a householder.
Actually, I think that you're stating that absolutely precisely. I mean, we've noticed that for people who have not been householders but come into the life with that intention,
mm-hmm.
it can be such a blessing
mm-hmm.
to a parent to have a Cancer moon child.
Mm.
Because they already know way more about it than you do, so
yeah,
they'll be a
she does. It's so beautiful. And she and my husband are Libra rising, so again, that's the householder, right?
Well, actually, yes, it is. But the emphasis there, and this is what you're describing, is such a blessing also, because if you have Venus in Libra, that means you'd be a newcomer to being valued for your relational qualities. So to have a husband with that much Libra, you both are gifting each other this precious, innocent investigation of conscious equal partnership.
Oh, that's beautiful.
but as you stated so well, and this is very much the case with people who have a life of such contrast from your lineage, is you're very few human beings with a chart like yours get it right early on, meaning the journey of, you know, collaborative partnership, marriage, family, and so on, is part of a curriculum.
Mm.
So generally the first or second, attempt to do that is just, you know, like, gosh, nobody who goes from 7th to 8th grade would ever say, shoot, I failed 7th, you know? I mean, it's a curriculum.
Yes.
The longer you go with it, the more you're on the leading edge of what conscious equal partnership can be at this time period on the planet.
Right. Thank you.
Does that make sense to you, what I'm sharing?
Oh, yes, totally. Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very
much.
You
and I have some similarities. We should talk.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm going on to the next question now.
Okay.
Can you please say your name and what your question is?
My name is Lisa.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a couple of questions. I think I read somewhere in your book about Pisces that a Pisces, if you come from the old mystery school of Pisces, that you don't have to come back. Does that mean that they've graduated from all the mystery schools?
I don't really remember ever saying that. I don't look at it in that kind of linear sense. I don't think even once I would have ever said that if a person had a Pisces moon, they don't have to come back. I don't know whether we can tell from a chart what's true about that anyway.
I think what you might have said is that that someone who maybe has a Pisces moon has achieved the place of the Bodhisattva. And that might be what she's referring to.
Hmm. Okay, so the Pisces Mystery School, one of the main ingredients of the Pisces Mystery School is the individual would have made a commitment to abnegate their own final liberation for the sake of being of service to others. And that is one of the pathways toward freedom and fulfillment. But if a Pisces moon incarnates, depending on what the rest of the chart is, who knows? Maybe you incarnated have an opportunity to have a self. You know, you already took the path of selfless service as far as you could take it. So what's your Venus?
Well,
what's your rising sign?
This was actually what I thought my sun was. However, after looking at it, the person that ran the chart actually had the wrong year.
Oh, well, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, 100 years off.
Gosh.
But the other thing that I saw was that my husband and and I have two sons. They all have the same south node and north node locations.
Do you mean by sign or by house?
By house. Their north node is in the second house of Taurus.
Mm-hmm.
And then both of my sons have the same rising sign in Virgo.
Mm-hmm.
So do you often see that in families that they'll come back like that, the same job and coming from the same?
Well, I mean, the best I can do on this is to give you some feedback on what the north node of the moon in the second house in Virgo rising would mean. That combination in and of itself does not suggest any previous link, and I certainly wouldn't say that's the main thing one would see in family charts. I mean, my gosh, family charts have all kinds of different themes. Sometimes the Aquarius moon person in the family is the outsider. Occasionally there'll be the family charts where the people have been together over and over and over again, exchanging roles. You know, well, you used to be the mom last time. I get to be the parent this time, you know, that sort of thing. You can see that in the charts. With the information that you've given me, and I'm trying to also make these comments applicable to whomever else is listening, is that the Taurus job or second house job in the Virgo tribe is the pleasure, the delight in having sacred work in service to spirit. It's like the individual who is so completely dedicated to find that thing, which is when they wake up in the morning, they have that sparkle in their eye because they know that what they were born to do, and it's in service to spirit. That would be the goal of the incarnation, to find that place.
Sure. Okay.
But based on what you've shared with me, I wouldn't know what else I could say as a larger overview answer.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I just thought it was really bizarre when I started looking at the charts and I saw that they were all coming into the same mystery school. They all had the same rising sign.
Right, right. And what is your rising sign?
My rising sign is Libra. My moon is Aquarius. My north node is Aries.
Well, I mentioned something about Aquarius moon. Where did I come from that? Where did that come from? So most Aquarius moons, and this would maybe apply to anybody else there listening who has an Aquarius moon, in a general way of putting it, is Aquarius moon people aren't really from here.
Okay.
They've dropped in from less dense dimensions. You know, they've been the ones, as it were, on a journey of spirit, of less density, and then they incarnate. And this is so interesting when you ask about Pisces, because one of the reasons why an Aquarius moon will incarnate is to want to be of help, and it's a way of overriding the prime directive. You know, the prime directive states that if you're a member of an advanced civilization, and for the most part, Aquarius moons come from a more advanced, universal, higher love, higher truth place, and if they incarnate from the place of Aquarius moon, why are they here? They're here to override the prime directive that states to not to interfere in the affairs of other people, but to incarnate amongst those you want to help. And in your case, you know, you're definitely investigating relationship and family and so on, but you come from elsewhere.
Okay.
Okay, let's go on to the next one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So then, so please say your name and what your question is. Hello?
Anybody there?
Hello?
Yes, I'm sorry, I had it on mute.
Oh.
Hi, my name is Fran. I wanted to know in the handbook if it talks about the 144 tribes.
It does.
Okay.
It doesn't give a description of every one of them, but it gives the clues about how to put that material together.
Okay, good. And my sun sign is Aries, and I have a Taurus moon in the seventh house, and I have Scorpio rising, and I'm not sure, but I think my north node is Aquarius in the fourth house. I don't know how often the north node moves.
every 2 hours.
Yes, if you're Scorpio rising and then your north node's in Aquarius, it would be the fourth house.
Yeah.
So what we could comment on here would be the dynamic between the Taurus moon and Scorpio rising, and particularly that very important clue that you shared about the fact that the moon is in the seventh house.
Mm-hmm.
The lineage history of Taurus moon, and this would apply to anybody in the listening audience here that has Taurus moon, the Taurus moon is neither renunciate nor householder. The Taurus moon represents a version of the goddess that people like Jean Bolan and other writers refer to as the alchemical goddess. She's the only one of the goddesses that simultaneously is autonomous and relational. And it goes back to a version of the goddess that the Greeks knew as Aphrodite, and in later cultures, and then too, but I mean, it's frequently referred to as courtesan, which what I mean by that is a woman who is fully relational but does not form long-term marriage agreements. You know, so the Taurus would be known for children or husbands, but an expert in intimacy. So it's like that time period in history where these are the women who could own their own homes, who were allowed into the libraries and were masters and experts at intimacy, art, culture, you know, things like that. But the interesting thing is that when an individual incarnates with the Taurus moon in the seventh house, then it's basically saying, take these relational qualities and see whether it's possible to bond with them. That is to have a long-term committed relationship while remaining true to the integrity of the Taurus moon, which is fundamentally autonomous. Well, now, the additional thing we would say is that with Scorpio rising, then the way to determine anything in your life, I mean, in the original conversation we were having before opening it up to questions and answers, we were saying that all life questions can be answered by applying the question to the rising sign.
Uh-huh.
Comes to relationship, when it comes to work, career, where you live, Scorpio rising is a very, very easy one to explain in one sentence. That doesn't mean it's easy to do. The explanation in that one sentence is either you feel it or you don't. And the purpose of a relationship, a job, a career, anything you do in life is to charge your batteries, to increase aliveness. So if you're doing something in your life that you don't feel anything, there probably isn't anything for you there.
Uh-huh.
Or the other thing is that if you're feeling something, but that means feeling drained, that's probably better than feeling nothing, but it's not what Scorpio rising has in mind, which is to take the journey into aliveness further, deeper to the edge, where there is a certain sense of a little bit of fear, a little bit of danger, you know, to go past that edge and to see what's there.
I also have my Mars and Jupiter in Taurus in the seventh house, and then my husband has Venus in Taurus.
Well, this is, it sounds like you got a pretty good thing going there.
I do.
Yeah, I mean, here's an example like the one we talked to, the woman we talked to earlier. I mean, you've been very greatly blessed because you have that commitment in a relationship, but also a large amount of connection to the aliveness, the kinesthetics, the tantric, the ability to it's way better than simply, say, having a husband or a wife on one's resume. It's the ability to go really, really deeply into the essence and depth of intimacy, like hanging out and going deep. So, does that help?
Yep.
Does that make
it
sense?
It does. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you so much, and we're going to go to the next question now. So, please say your name and what your question is. Hello?
Anybody there? Unmute if you're on the... next in line.
Angelique. it looks like.
Hello, my name is Angelica. Thank you, Daniel and Kaylin, for this wonderful presentation. It really helps me to put things into perspective. I have a question, and how does now in a person's the person's sun sign fit into the other parts of the interpretation of the chart?
I made a comment in the opening statements that if the sun sign and Venus are the same sign,
yes,
then that intensifies, or shall we say it, it removes any ambiguity as far as what expression of the goddess you came in to explore.
Okay.
If they're different, then you have to look at the relationship between the essence of that sun sign, meaning the month you were born into, and its relationship with either the moon or the rising sign. You have to. I can illustrate this if you can tell me your situation.
Yes, I can do that. My moon sign is in Scorpio, in the eighth house, and I have a Aries rising, and I have a Cancer sun. My Venus is in Leo, in the fifth house, and my north node is in the first house in Aries.
Okay, so I realize I'm you know trying to synthesize all of that here very quickly. So the Venus in Leo, I'm sorry, you said Venus in Leo?
Yes, Venus in Leo.
And the sun was where?
In Cancer.
Right. And the rising sign was?
In Aries.
So the situation there is that Venus does have a lot in harmony with the Scorpio moon and Aries rising. And this is actually far more significant than anything you might read about the Cancer sun sign. What I mean by this is, if we look at the goddess imagery of Scorpio moon, if we look at the archetypal imagery of Venus and Leo, and even add to it Aries rising, all three of those expressions of the mystery for a woman are actional. They are the kinds of qualities that the more recent culture would have said were masculine or too strong or aggressive. But if we have those three things from the perspective of the solar feminine, we combine the solar feminine with what the original matrilineal culture understood about Scorpio, which is that she was Shakti. She was the active force. The culture understood it was the woman who had the power. And that doesn't mean the men were wimps, but I mean the men could rise up to meet the power and the strength of the feminine. You know, so for you, that my main concern, just by knowing that information, would be is whether or not the Cancer sun sign material has muted or has, in a sense, drowned out the actional power and strength. I mean, that's like Amazon queen, warrior Amazon, and then the Shakti goddess, you know. So those are the things that are more essential than anything you might read about the Cancer sun sign.
Yeah, that makes sense, because sometimes I have a feeling that I cannot move forward. I get slowed down somehow, and that would explain that.
Very much so, and it's an example of where, in the situation of a chart like yours, the sun sign material is really not helpful at all. A lot of times the more popular understandings of sun signs end up influencing the person's journey. You know, you're supposed to be like a Cancer, you know, but in fact, it's actional and powerful and strong. And the Aries rising part of it is basically saying that the most important thing in your life is having a really powerful, clear mission and purpose statement.
Angelica, I just will say that I have a very similar situation. I have all that and Scorpio rising and so on my own chart. Just slightly different placements from what you have, and I'm a Pisces sun. And what happened for me was that I lived my life out of Pisces because that was what I thought I was supposed to do. That was sort of the cultural projection, etc. Until I started to understand these other parts of it that were really wanting expression, but I didn't know how to express them. And so this work was incredibly liberating for me to understand that. And the reality was I was always the strongest person in any relationship, but I did it in a Pisces way, so it didn't look that way.
That's right, and that's why it helps so much how you put this in perspective, because, you know, somehow when I grew up, I thought, well, I don't feel like I'm a Cancer. Or somebody said, well, you're not behaving like a Cancer. You're too aggressive.
Exactly.
You know.
you're what you're expressing and sharing with us is just really making the major point we've been trying to make here, beyond the sun sign, you see.
Uh-huh.
But you know, but to look at it from another perspective, there is some value in being born in the month of Cancer, because I guess we could say that without the Cancer sun, then
uh-huh.
it's so powerful, so overwhelming, that
mm-hmm.
it's the kind of thing that in maybe the last 500 years, 1,000 years, got women burned at the stake, you know? I mean, so it's,
uh-huh.
it kind of made a kindler, gentler version of that strength.
Okay. Well, good. well, it's interesting that you say that, because I had once a spontaneous reliving of a former lifetime where I actually was burned at the stake. So
yeah, that's so perfect, because I mean, well, that was a weird way of putting it. I don't mean that. That's a, your example fits in perfectly with what we share, is that I cannot tell you how many women with Scorpio Moon entirely resonate with that particular situation of having been victimized by having some connection to the strength of the feminine principle.
Uh-huh.
And,
well,
and do, you know, either literal past life memories of being burned at the stake or in some way violated or invalidated for their strength.
Right, right. Oh, well, thank you. That really explains it very well. Thank you so much.
So welcome. Thank you. And we're going to go to the next question now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Pamela. Can you hear me?
Yes, Pamela. Thank you. What's your question?
Okay. So I am a Scorpio sun sign with a Taurus moon in the fifth house and a Sag rising. And I think I'm in the true node Sagittarius is in the first house, I think, or 12th. I was born in 55.
Sagittarius rising, and the sign of the north node is also Sagittarius?
Yes.
Okay, so then it would be in the first house.
Right.
Oh, first.
So what we're looking at here is the contrast of the dynamic of having come from Taurus. And I've already, in a previous call, described some of the things about the Taurus moon.
Right.
It's relational and autonomous. The Aphrodite / courtesan expression of the feminine, not solar feminine at all. But when a woman incarnates with Sag rising in the north node of the moon, close to that position, so it's the Aries job in the Sagittarius tribe, one of the most important intentions in the life is be able to experience yourself directly connected to truth and spirit. It's a path of autonomy, a path of sovereignty. It's, in a sense, it doesn't mean you're not great at relationship. It just means that the new expression of the self is similar to what I described when I was talking about Sagittarius moon with one of the previous callers. That if a person has a Sagittarius moon, then they come from the place that you're going toward, which is a journey which is associated with what we call the vision quest Amazon, where Amazon means a woman whose identity is based upon her accomplishments, her achievements, and her freedom, but the motivation for that is the love of truth. So it's a journey which is more about consciousness and freedom and spaciousness, as opposed to the sort of city pleasure Epicurean life. But now, you can synthesize these two, and I love the connection of Taurus and Sag, because it actually describes an archetypal expression of the goddess who are losing, which is back when the courtesan were the women who were allowed into the libraries. They had a completely independent investigatory, spiritual, and intellectual thriving life. So that's that combination of Taurus and Sagittarius. But still, the adventure, the quest of the soul, the journey of the self is toward the autonomy of having a direct connection with spirit itself.
Excellent.
Does it make sense?
Yes, excellent. I mean, truly, very, very much so. What about the fifth house?
Because of the position of the moon?
Yes, the moon Taurus fifth house. Mm-hmm. So would that be the lineage, right?
Yeah, in shamanic astrology, second or third level of interpretation, and I made reference to this in a previous caller who had the Aquarius moon in the seventh house, that the house of the moon is where in the current life the lineage skills are to be expressed. You know, so basically having the moon in Taurus is in the house that the skills of Taurus in the current life are to be used in a Leo type way, which means as a performer, as the leading woman, as the celebrant of the mysteries, the leading edge of life. Well, rather than Taurus moon, which is kind of more in the background. So it's maybe bringing the aesthetics to the forefront, but for the purpose of in service to the truth and the quest for meaning and purpose.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yep.
You're so welcome. We're going to go to the next question now.
Hi, this is Skylar.
Say again.
Skylar. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you so much. I've studied Vedic astrology and what we call archetypal astrology. And
yep.
Believe it or not, I'm getting my PhD in Jungian and archetypal psychology. So you resonate with me.
Hey, all right.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm trying to integrate Western and Vedic astrology, and both have their own, I guess, ways of looking at things.
May I interject for a second?
Yes.
Because I love talking with individuals who are both archetypal and have some awareness of the Vedic that version of the sidereal system. The approach we have in this system to the 144 storylines is roughly equivalent to, in the Vedic system, the use of the nakshatriya of the moon,
right,
the nakshatriya of the ascendant.
Got it.
Makes sense. Works. There's actually a blend there, but there is no relationship in the Vedic system with what we're doing that would have to do with the archetypes of the signs.
Well, that's what but you see, you're the first person. I just wrote a paper on how Carl Jung's functions are actually the four elements. This is the first, that the archetypes are the plant. I get that, but no one else gets that.
Well, actually, in shamanic astrology, that is a major feature of how we train people.
Yes.
And there is, we weren't the first ones to do it. I mean, Liz Green in her, in the 70s called Relating was, tuned into the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Liz Green, her work has definitely helped me feel like I'm home.
Yeah.
So I'm Virgo rising.
Yes.
I've got the Aquarius fifth house, north node, moon in Taurus in the ninth house, sun in Cancer, Venus on the cusp of Taurus and Gemini.
Well, the moon in Taurus in the ninth house, I mean, you're actually bringing up some of the same themes that I brought up in the previous call.
Yes.
It's the union of the hetera. You know, did you know Tony Wolf's view of the hetera?
Tony Wolf, hetera. You know, we don't get a lot of that because it's de-emphasized, the amount of interest that Jung and Tony Wolf had in astrology. So, yeah, hetera is a version
of
the
moon. It's actually her use of a word that would not be controversial. I mean, she could have said courtesan, but it's that understanding of a fully independent, free woman who doesn't marry, doesn't have a family, but has a completely, leading edge, exploratory, advanced spiritual and intellectual understanding.
Yes, got it.
Mm-hmm. Then with Virgo rising, the number one issue for Virgo rising is this complete focus on sacred work and understanding the patterning. I always like to think of Virgo rising as like the web of Spider Woman, the patterning of the soul, the patterning of the way in which the goddess Gaia is expressing, you know, through seasons and cycles and patterns and webbings, and you know that's Virgo's passion and aliveness.
No wonder you're studying astrology, because
exactly.
It is the fundamental patterns
and archetypal psychology at the same time.
It makes total sense.
And what did you say your Venus was, excuse me?
Venus seems to be on the cusp of Taurus and Gemini.
Which one?
I think it's more towards Taurus.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
it's on the line there, but it's right. It's with
it's
the moon.
You. I mean, we could have a much longer and discussion about the implications about this for personal relationship. But if we're just putting our attention on your work and your interest in Virgo rising, it just allows for such a savoring and a pleasurable enjoyment of the archetypal realm.
Exactly.
It's not just mental, you know. I mean, it's something that there's an eros to it. There's a tangible kinesthetic joy of experiencing the textures and flavors of the archetypal patterns.
You are the first person that I have, you know, that just gets. I get this. You get. This is the first time. I mean, Rick Tarnas wrote the book Psyche and Cosmos.
Yes. Yes.
And
uh-huh.
We've obviously. I've studied archetypal psychology, and I am studying. But this is putting it all together for me.
I'm very happy about that.
Yay.
Thank you.
You're so welcome. So I think we're going to the next question
yes,
now.
Yes. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Hi, this is Taylor. How are you?
Hi,
thank you
Taylor.
For taking my
Taylor,
call.
Right? Yes. Yeah. What's your question?
And so I have Taurus rising and a Cancer moon, a Cancer sun and a Libra moon, and my Venus is in Gemini,
uh-huh.
as is my Mars.
All right, so
I wouldn't want to know exactly what is my purpose and
mm-hmm.
what am I supposed to be up to. I'm an artist.
Yeah, so probably the main theme that I could describe here very quickly would be, if you're a Libra moon and Taurus rising and Venus in Gemini, that you came into the life off of a lineage that was way more, mainstream? I mean, basically the imagery of a person who defines who they are by who they're with. I mean, it's a partnership relationship lineage, a person who knows themselves based upon who they're with. But what you've shared with me about Venus in Gemini and Taurus rising, it doesn't mean it's a rejection of intimacy, but it's basically saying you have to be free, that to define who you are about who you're with would be damaging, regressive. Even if you're in a tremendous relationship, if at any point you define who you are about who you're with, then that's a regressive expression of this. But certainly Gemini, Venus, and Taurus rising, that combination is all about artistry and color and dance and music and expression. It's actually a combination that we would see, like, say, if somebody happened to be in the circus or the carnival. You know, it's like life is a dance and an expression of music and magic and color, and it also is connected to the imagery of the eternal youth. You're kind of old when you're young, young when you're old, where the latter years are the maiden years. To be able to specifically say life purpose rather than putting it into these mystery schools, it'd be certainly far beyond my capacity, just, you know, knowing the archetypes to be able to narrow it down. I mean, I need to know at least the north node of the moon's house position to make
Cancer.
It very specific.
The north node.
Hmm?
Cancer is my north node.
Is that the sign or the house?
The house, the sign.
Yeah, I need to know that. I would need to know the house of it. But I think what I've just shared with you as far as the contrast of what you're moving into, which it is a combination, which is the puella aeternus, eternal youth, and to be associated in the world of art and creativity, non-householder approaches is really what your path is.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Now, we're at the end of our time, but I can't help but be curious here. Were there any men listening? I'm more than happy to do one more here before we complete, but can I open it up to have at least one question coming from a man?
Let's see if this one is. Mm-hmm. Okay, so can you say your name?
No, this is not a man.
Oh. God.
I was wondering the same thing. Are there any men on the call?
You know, the first time we did this call, we had several men, actually. So it's interesting that in the queue.
I remember their questions.
This is a heck of a lot of great material that can be shared about the gods, too, you know, and about the storylines available for the masculine at this time in history. But since you're on the line and we're, you know, at the end of our time, what's your question?
And I'm grateful to be here. I'm trying to understand, my moon is in Libra, second house. My rising sign is Virgo in the first
mm-hmm.
house. My north node is also in Libra in the second house. My sun sign is Cancer, and my Venus is in Gemini in the 10th house.
So this is actually quite similar to, I believe, the previous call, where the Libra moon is a very, very specific place on the wheel of life about where you've come from, which is what Jean Boland calls a vulnerable goddess. It's the version of the goddess who defines herself through a partner in the world, in the culture. But everything else you shared with me, Venus and Gemini and what did you say, Taurus rising?
Virgo rising and North Node Libra.
Even more cut. Venus in Gemini and Virgo rising is the journey in the current life is way more about your autonomy and sovereignty and independence, but for the purpose of sacred work. Whenever I see the Gemini-Virgo combination for current life purpose, it refers to, if we think of this historically, sacred theater, where there would be a certain tradition where, in fact, in France, as recently as 100 years ago, they had this Royal Theater Company, where 200 years ago, where if you had this performance piece, if you had this skill or talent that you were doing and sharing in the theater or music or dance or something, it had a sacred pedigree in the sense that even if you committed a crime, you were immune from prosecution. It's kind of like the show must go on. I mean, this is a... the primacy here is not about simply having here's what I do to make money. It's like the feeling that what you're doing is in service to spirit, and that focus toward work and your sacred work being more important than how well you're doing in a relationship. In fact, maybe the final piece I could say about this with the time we have here is that in this stage, in being at this place on the wheel of life, as far as your life purpose issues, that you can have a great relationship, but there's no way to be with someone who expects that the partner, the person you're with, would be your number one priority. It's important to whoever
exactly
you're with that your number one priority is your work.
Yeah.
Does it make sense?
Yes, it does. It makes a lot of sense.
Very
and
good.
I've encountered that throughout my life, so thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank
you.
So
our next teleclass, which is in a couple of weeks, right?
Right. Actually, it will be on October 12th, and this is the one where we'll be, as we've mentioned several times, looking at the gods and goddesses or the expressions of the feminine and the masculine through the archetypal look at Venus and Mars. And that will be happening on October 12th. We will be sending out reminders with the call-in information and so on. So I would really like to thank everyone for joining us. We will be sending out an email that will have the information on how to access the recording of this call that you can download if you want to listen to it again. Thanking everybody. If you want to know anything more about shamanic astrology, check out our website. And be sure to watch for the email instructions, and we'll look forward to seeing you or connecting with you
in a couple of weeks.
In a couple of weeks. Thank you so much.